and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. It is myself and Kay running through the history of All Japan Women. And these episodes, we hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, Kay covers JD Star, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day, to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. And it's time for All Japan Women, episode 52, December 9th, 1991, the big show coming after the latest Wrestle Marine Pred show in Kawasaki from November. That's where we left off in the last episode.
It is. We're in Korakuen Hall now. Famous venue, Korakuen Hall.
Yeah, no one's heard of that.
No one's heard of it. No. Doesn't exist.
Well, Kay, since this is also doubly functioning these days as All Japan Women Destiny,
there is
probably a good time to mention that there was no tag league in 1990, the year prior.
No, there wasn't, which was weird because I think up to this point they had had one every year.
Sort of. I mean, if we're counting it in conjunction with the Grand Prix.
Right, so I want to specify when they started doing the tag league. I think they had done it every year. I could be off, but I think I remember them doing it every year, but I think this year they didn't.
Well, let's kind of go over some winners here, shall we?
Sure.
85 was Dome, Dump and Bull.
Bull Dump.
86 was Nagayo and Hota due to the breakup of the Crush Gals, and I think Asuka was also injured at the same time. I think you might be correct. Recall Asuka in the tag league at all that year. No, she was one rookie Suzuka Minami.
Oh,
got zero points.
That's a team. That is a weird team.
I think she did get injured before the tournament started, hence the 0 points. Or Minami just lost every match.
I don't know if I'd believe that, because you think at least some point they'd have Asuka win one of the matches for them or a couple of them. So she might have just been hurt and they forfeited some of them.
Yeah. 87 were the Crush Gals, of course. 88 was Hisako Uno and Mika Suzuki, Suzuka Minami. Very odd year that was. It was a very large table. Nishiwaki and Hota, the Fire Jets, won the table, but they lost the finals. So that's what happened there.
Yeah, that was weird, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. 89 was Medusa and Nishiwaki, of all people, so tag league's very strange. But we mentioned
it's almost like Stardom's tag league, where just random teams sometimes win.
Yeah, we mentioned 89 was a pretty dire year in rebuilding, and 1990 was so rebuilding that they just didn't even have a tag league.
It's like, shit, we don't have enough people to make teams. Well, no tag league this year.
Yeah, very, very strange. Tag league is always, always bizarre how they come to the winners ever since, well, the first one passed.
Well, like I said, Stardom's, it's so weird how much Stardom mirrors AJW, because their tag league has always been kind of weird, too. Like, I mean, Sam and Orisa were, like, the only team that people had predicted from the outset, but I think before that, it was, like, it was Utami and Momo, who were just, they were teaming because they were part of the same faction, but they won, and why did they win? Who knows? It didn't really make too much sense outside of putting two belts on Momo and another belt on Utami. It kind of, I don't think anyone had them pegged, right? I don't think anyone had Momo Oz pegged last year. I certainly didn't.
No, not at all. But we are at least coming off a couple weeks of Wrestle Marine Piad, and that was kind of the finale to Jungle Jack and the Monster Ripper angle with Bull Nakano, and we kind of went straight into Tag League, and this Tag League was rough. Okay, I found a couple just random matches, and let me just run through.
I think I found the same ones. I think I found the same ones you found, because I went looking too.
Yeah, because the classics in this episode only has the semifinals and finals, and honestly, that's all you need to watch, because it's either like DQ finishes, countouts, or just listen to these teams here. Coming in last, Mima Shimoda and Miyori Kamiya, 1 point. Atsuko Mita and Minami Toyota, the Mint Showers, only 3. God help us. And that got me curious to looking about how LCO placed in future tag leagues. Okay, funny enough, they would either never team together or they do terrible.
Yeah, I keep telling you, like, they do better outside of AJW. They do better outside. Like, when they go to Oz Academy, they're, like, the tough, good shit, right? Gaia version of them is great. Like, they're awesome with the biker gimmick and everything. It's awesome. In AJW, I don't think they even know what to fucking do with them.
Yeah, they team, like, the next, like, couple years, but they don't really place high, and then they just don't team after that. Loose look, but I found that fascinating. But yeah, Minami Toyota and Mita, fucking second to last. Crazy. Marika Yoshida and Takako Inoue, a team we've kind of seen tag up a lot, just kind of in the undercards, they get 3 points. Debbie Malenko and Suzuka Minami, what a random matchup that is, they get 3 points. Bat Yoshinaga and Hota, 3.5. That sounds horrendous.
I saw one of these tag matches, because I vaguely remember seeing these two team up, and God, it's so bad. They suck. Both of them suck. They complement each other, though. Their styles complement each other so well, but they both suck, so it doesn't matter.
Well, here's the thing. I found one of those random Bat Hota matches, and I was like, I gotta see one of these. And Bat goes in there and tries to wrestle, so you know it's bad. And then Hota kind of stands on the apron most of the time, and then gets her kicks in, and not much happens. It's a very short tournament in the scheme of things. It only goes a month. October 4th to December 8th. And then third place was Hokuto and Nakano, 4.5. Kong and Kimura, Jungle Jack, 4.5. So there's your semifinal matchup. And then the winners of the table, Inoue and Yamada. And I can't remember why they started teaming together.
Oh, they went to Mexico together, remember?
That's right.
I think we saw
that team.
Because they were sent there. They were sent to Mexico together, and I think as a result, they made them a team coming
right.
out. Coming
they
back
came back with the sombreros and heavy tans.
They sure did. They still have those heavy tans.
All right, it's all coming back to me.
In a way, it does.
Yeah, it's all coming back to me. So that's the state of kind of the tag division in 91. It's just kind of this hodgepodge of teams trying to figure things out. They're coming off a year where they didn't even have the tag league. So, boy, oh boy. All right. So what's our first match here on this classics episode, Kay? Take me through the matches, and I'll just kind of throw in some thoughts.
All right. Well, our first match is the ever so elusive and great Rookie of the Year tournament finals. Rei Tamada versus Akemi Torisu. This match was bad.
Did you say rookie tournament finals?
Yes, I looked it up. This is Rookie of the Year. tournament final.
Are you implying that there are people worse than Akemi Torisu?
I literally couldn't even find any other rookies, so other rookies must not have made this, but it's labeled. So I had to hunt down, through our source, I actually found out the DVD where this match is on, or the VHS where this match is on. And there are two other matches beforehand that I believe are rookies, but are names that don't show up on Cage Match and don't show up any fucking where else. Have you heard of Hiromu Tanahashi?
That's time traveling Hiromu Takahashi, just as a female.
I made that same joke in my head too. That's hilarious.
Is Miori Kamiya in it?
Oh, I didn't see her name. I didn't see the full block. I only saw a few matches, but this is the tournament final, and Akemi Torisu making any tournament final anywhere is dire because she is so bad.
So for those that don't remember, Akemi Torisu is the most horrible wrestler you've ever seen because she's the punching bag opponent of one Bat Yoshinaga in the shoot matches.
She sure was, and I didn't know she was a rookie. Apparently, she's a rookie.
Why, sure. Why not? But holy shit, and you think she's bad in those shoot matches? She's also bad in regular matches.
This right here, when I was watching this, my first thought was, oh, you could definitely see Yokota didn't train these two. Like, 100%. She didn't touch them. She didn't advise them. She didn't do shit. Because they suck at even the fundamentals. A Jaguar Yokota rookie will never suck at the fundamentals.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. But to be fair, I will give Ri Tamada at least some credit. Her opponent, Kay, is Akemi Torisu. Like, what are you going to do?
She was pretty bad too. She wasn't any better. I mean, she was better of the two, but like, I mean, what's one shit better than another shit? Really? Yeah.
So Ri Tamada, for those that are wondering like why this match is on the classics. Ri Tamada is kind of like your mid-carder for a long she had a pretty decent like decade-long career.
And she was called the female cheetah or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And she's most notable for being one of the people that jumped ship from AJW to Arcian when Rossi just went, I'm taking people.
So he didn't take the best.
No, he didn't need to. Well, he's like, I'm taking all the people that you're not going to pay money anymore, basically.
Man, it's funny. Time seems to have gone backwards modern day, except he's taking people with actual talent that aren't being used now.
I think Ri Tamada, I've seen some of her matches in a couple of the RC and things. She's okay. She's all right. She's a good little
I've seen one match. I've seen one match of hers. It was a tag match she was in. She wasn't bad. That's how I know she was like something Cheetah, I think was her nickname.
Yeah. I'm wondering if I can't get over the quote from Rossi. When Arcian first came, he just goes, I'm poaching you guys. And everyone got scared. And then he just took them anyways because, well, if you're not going to pay the wrestlers, he's taking them. If you mirror that to today, he doesn't even have to do that because they come to him.
Like, it's funny the timing of this because he just gave an interview that everyone's losing their shit over because he literally says, when he was asked, they went headhunting for Mai Sakurai and Waka. And he's just like, no, they called me. Yeah. You don't have to go headhunting when they call you. And I was like, that's my boy there. Just telling him, hey, I don't have to call them. They're calling me.
Yeah, I did love that response. He goes, hey, I would poach, but I don't need to.
It's great. It's perfect. Mirror that with his bitch slap of Takagi in the same interview. Rossi's on like another level.
Yeah, he's very proud. Proud of his investments paying off. It's pretty funny to see.
Fuck, he's been working a decade on this company. I'd be fucking proud too. Shit.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone started either earlier than him, or I mean, to be fair, TJPW has kind of only grown the last like couple years. But look, man, we got into that a lot earlier on the podcast proper here, Red Leaf. But yeah, Akemi Torisu. As much as we shit on her, and she's the dirt worst, she's by far the worst wrestler I have seen on this AJW journey. And from everything I've learned, she won this match. She did like that shoot roll up pin, shoot in the half, and it's like, all right, we're out of here. Fuck.
It's funny because she retires the next year.
Gee, I can't imagine why.
I know. I mean, being a bad wrestler, Jesus. It's just, come on now. I mean, I guess there's a reason why they didn't produce any more stars post the last class that they made. You know, Manami Toyota and all of them didn't produce any stars. That makes sense. When you have no Jaguar Yokota back there, make it the factory of stars. You produce a Kimi Tarusu.
You know, that is something I was thinking about, funny enough, because it's like, I was asking myself, okay, why didn't they make any stars after that, like, class of 80, what, 8, I guess is the very last one?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was a lack of recruiting. I think they just trained them not to be top stars.
Oh, Jaguar Yokota wasn't training people anymore.
Yeah, and it's not
he
like
said
the people...
no more.
Well, I think that's why we see a lot of the other companies get better in producing talent, while AJW just maintain. I don't know. It's going to be something worth following, worth paying attention to in real time as we watch. I have a lot of different theories I'm developing. That's one of the things I've really come to appreciate, kind of going on this AJW journey with you and the podcast, and doing LLPW on the Patreon, Ridley Fretchercast Patreon, $5 tier, and kind of going through the classics and various matches a second and third time through on All Japan Women Destiny is got to learn it all, because you got to start somewhere, right? And mm-hmm. Now I'm learning more backgrounds and giving thoughts and opinions, and then when you kind of start filling in the gaps, because that's when you start getting a feel for booking patterns, who's a star, who's not, who's on the rise, what hits and misses. It's super interesting to now, with that knowledge, going through 91 and going into 92 here, with the amount of knowledge I think you yourself, Kay, have learned, is super interesting to start filling in gaps and just various matches that we are aware of coming in the early to mid-90s, when they just start popping off, you know, five-star classics here, is what happens in the mid-card? What happens in the undercard? Who do they miss on? The supercards that are coming, booking strategies. It's super interesting for what's to come.
One of the coolest things that I've come to realize since I've been doing my JD Star journey in 2001, go check that out, the Patreon $5 tier.
Five-star match roll-up Sumi Sakai you're talking about?
So, Yokota has been training the Asterisk girls. These are wrestlers that have come, or actresses, more first off, that come in with no experience, and some of them with very little athletic experience. And she's training them, and some of them, so far, haven't been bad. The second class, so far, has been much better. Their debut matches seem to be better. They seem to have better form to them all. Noticing that, and then going back and looking at AJW with people she wrestled and trained there, it's so interesting to see that. One, her style of training hasn't changed. Two, how you can tell she's trained a wrestler especially when they're a rookie, by how they act and how their fundamentals are. Something I've definitely noticed, especially with the second Asterisk class compared to, say, rookie Manami Toyota and rookie Inoue and stuff like that. I've noticed a similar pattern in styles. Very interesting.
So our next,
to our next match?
Yeah, let's move up the card now. Let's speed this up a bit.
All right, my girl, my wife, Manami Toyota, with Debbie Malenko making her career renaissance modern day, versus Takako Inoue and Marika Yoshida.
All right, you popped me on that one.
Career renaissance. Not that it was much of a renaissance to begin with. This gear, we gotta talk about this gear.
Yeah, a double. Yeah,
what the hell is she wearing?
Okay, look, there's new gear all around, on not just the undercard that we're seeing here, but also at the top of the card with the big main event stars. A lot of changes going on in appearance and physically as well. People are reaching kind of their physical peaks. It's looking like you can definitely see the difference in like Mariko Yoshida's shoulders, Takako Inoue's legs, and kind of just lower back strength that she's developed. Debbie Malenko is in phenomenal shape as well. She's looking much more comfortable than the last couple times we've seen her. And Manami Toyota has her new kind of pirate shoulder tassel coat and her kind of trademark sleeve onesie getup that she's got with the black.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because so the coat is the same coat she's been wearing, but it's slightly modified. I think right. She added some stuff to it, but it's been the same coat she's been wearing, which is interesting that she didn't change it. I mean, don't fix what's not broken, right?
Yeah.
But her new gear is, I think this is the gear that people mostly associate in their head with Manami Toyota. Early Manami is this kind of gear right here, and she definitely has a style that she sticks with most of her career. Kind of like one Tsukasa Fujimoto she trained does a similar thing. But Jesus Christ, what the hell was Takako wearing?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because the team of Takako Inoue and Mariko Yoshida are now sporting. So beforehand, for reference, Takako was pulling off kind of a plain white Cutie Suzuki, Michiko Nagashima, Norio Tateno white onesie kind of dealio, and Mariko Yoshida had, Power Ranger shoulder pads with
sure
their onesie
did.
Going on. Now, they both have kind of matching teal-blue gear onesies, but Takako's has kind of a striped pattern from the midsection up to her neckline. Very strange look, very unique. Kay, I am a fan of like turquoise. I love the mineral. I love the precious gem. But as a gear color, maybe not the best look.
So I gotta correct you on something. They weren't just lines. They were like poofy little like lines. They were poofy, almost like so. You know that when you make a cake, right? And you take
yes.
the frosting and you make it little dips that are kind of like poofy looking.
Yes, of course.
That's what looked like she was on her fucking top of her gear, and I couldn't unsee that, and it looks terrible.
So, anyways, the match.
Match, yes, the match. There was a match that happened. Well, Manami Toyota did good. I've noticed. I don't know if you've noticed, but she's changed the style of drop kick she does now.
Yes,
she used to do like the normal sort of diagonal drop kick that everyone does. Now she's doing the flat back drop kick, and I've noticed a lot of star wrestlers also now doing that. I wonder what the difference is and why one's changed to the other. Maybe one's safer, I'm assuming.
I think it just looks cooler.
I like the angled drop kicks better. They look way more impactful.
If you can hit it right.
Right, I guess that is important. But she's doing a lot more of that. She's, you know, of course, wild and all over the place. There was a top rope moonsault plancha, you know, to the outside that Manami does. As well as one on the inside that Manami does as well, because she's nuts and a mad woman.
Yeah, instead of just the mid-rope lion salt, it's a top rope lion salt functions as a plancha, and that's how she won the match, pinning Yoshida. Takako Inoue, heavily protected, but not main event level yet. I am loving this booking with Takako Inoue. I'm way into her, Kay.
No, well, so when she leaves, you should probably go and watch Gaia.
What?
And JWP when she becomes bad bitch.
Yeah, we'll get to that point. I mean, you got your you'll get to your back to your JWP on Big Egg Joshi podcast eventually. I believe in you.
Well, I will eventually.
But
just need a break.
But I'm doing LLPW in I'm about to approach 1993 when the super cards really start happening with LLPW.
Ooh, yeah, that's an interesting time frame too.
Yeah, that's when we
so
start.
So the LLPW's time, like how they're slotted too. They're almost like slotted like as a lower kind of afterthought promotion for the most part on those cards.
Yeah, and I'll have a lot of thoughts over on the Patreon with that. But when we start getting to AJW classics and they start combining rosters in those super cards, that's going to be super interesting. How people like a Takako Inoue and Mariko Yoshida start getting booked against said people. Because I know how Manami Toyota and company up at the top of the card, they just kind of wreck shop. I'm more interested
sure
in the
do.
Yeah, I'm just more interested in the mid card. And to be fair, you know, if you want to make like a little modern Forbidden Door reference, because we're that's gonna be fun to start seeing the Forbidden Doors opened with the Joshi companies back in the 90s.
Yeah, 30 years ago it was open.
I think it's fair to say, with the companies that we're involved with, AJW is the AEW for a big portion of the time. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I think if we're gonna make a modern comparison, like they're the modern Fed Japan in terms of Joshi.
Well, because the Fed's like out of the equation because they're not involved. I'm talking
no,
just
no,
in
I
the
mean,
little AEW universe.
Okay, so you're just not talking like size and stature. You're talking more like how they function within their portion of the scene. Yeah, I guess
right,
because so.
You got AW, Impact, and throw like AAA in there and New Japan. So those are your four companies, right? So
ROH? Huh.
Oh, you know, they're not involved. So who would be like the Impact, AAA, and New Japan? Like, who is the second top company? Would that be Gaia? Because they're kind of on the level of AJW, just much like New Japan is on the level of AEW to a sense.
So Gaia would be weird because JWP would be that placeholder. And then when Gaia exists, Gaia kind of is above both of them for the most part.
Yeah, and New Japan and their top guys are definitely above them for the most part. It's interesting. I can't wait for those times. And don't worry, we will get there. The match was okay overall.
It was fine.
I thought everyone did well. I'm not quite on the Mariko Yoshida bandwagon yet. There's other podcasts out there that cover AJW, namely Victory Through Guts. They're big on Mariko Yoshida. I'm not seeing what they see with her. I'm more on the Takako Inoue train.
I don't see it either. I think I'm more on Toshi Yamada, which we'll get to a little later. I like her a lot more, but I'm also, like I mentioned before, I'm a big mark for her and Manami Toyota. It's just their entire feud and dynamic.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to Yamada.
Of course, seeing both of them makes me happy.
Okay,
so moving on to the next match?
Yeah, the tag league matches, the semifinal and final. Let's do it.
Jungle Jack, Aja Kong, and Bison Kimura versus Bull Nakano and Kira Hokuto, the team I've dubbed Murder Row Bitches.
Murder Row Bitches.
Because, I mean, listen, Bull has nunchaku. She's like stabbing people with the nunchaku. She's choking people with the nunchaku. She's just kind of trying to kill people, is essentially what she's trying to do.
So that occurred to me in this match. And this is it's even in my notes, Kay. I'm glad you brought up the nunchucks. When was the last time we saw her break those out and go into kind of full her old Gokaku Dome with dump mode? I feel like it's been a while.
It was when she won the belt. I don't think she had done it after the belt at all that I can remember. It's funny that you brought that up, though. So Japanese commentary was mentioning that when she brought it out, that it seems like facing Monster Ripper brought out the vicious side of Bull again.
Oh, okay.
Which, when you look at this match, makes a lot of sense because she was definitely much more murdero bitch Bull trying to kill people. I want to also point out the crowd audibly goes awe and gasps whenever Aja and Bull interact.
Yes, it's a very hot matchup between the two.
And it's so great. It's so masterfully built because they've had them trade wins back and forth, but Aja's only ever beaten her when the belt's not been on the line. Right? And so they're constantly kind of building the tension with it, and I love it. Hokuto also does her good spots there, but she gets tossed around like a rag doll by Bison and by Aja at some points in the match. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, I really like this because just kind of setting the stage here, we got Afro Kong now, which is a great look for her.
Sure is.
And sexy bad bitch Bison, gimme gimme, because look, but they both lost their hair in January of 91, were at the end of 91, and they have their hair looks back, and they're different than they were before, which I think is a good thing to do. You don't want to just grow it right back to what it used to be, because Bison used to have long curly hair and Aja had like a more mohawk thing, and she's kind of more afro style now, and to me it makes her look a little bit older, a little bit meaner, a little bit badder. I like it. I'm a fan. And the other thing here is you got red belt and white belt top contenders here. Bison is the white belt champion. There's Akira Hokuto on the other end. And then you got Bull Nakano, red belt champion, with Aja Kong on the other end. So you got immediately what feels like a hot match. And this is kind of related. And I was thinking of this, and I'm wondering if you heard commentary say anything about that. Is this has a big relation to that hair versus hair match from January earlier in the year, except now it's Hokuto and not Kyoko Inoue. So in a way, this felt like it's hotter and could lead to something further down the line for all four people involved. I can't imagine that was not on purpose.
So, commentary doesn't mention the belts. They briefly touch on the red belt when Aja and Bull clash, sort of talking up a potential future challenge that Aja could do. For reference, my girlfriend was watching this one with me, so that's kind of how I got some of the commentary.
Of course.
So they also had Linus Asuka on commentary.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so if you hear a female voice, that's Asuka. She's still employed by them currently. I don't think Chigusa is anymore. I think Chigusa leaves this year or the next year and kind of just does her own thing later on. Obviously, she makes Gaia, but I think she kind of leaves and tries to maybe be a personal trainer or something. She mentioned something about it a long time ago in an interview. I thought this match was amazing. The crowd was like red hot for everything. They fought in the crowd. They fought in the ring, which fighting the crowd will become a thing in the main event too. But they definitely were trying to build, like you, to your point, they were definitely trying to build up the two matchups. But they made sure that Aja and Bull didn't spend too much time in the ring against each other. You notice that too?
Yeah, not in the ring. I really like when it broke out to the brawl outside, because it's a Jungle Jack match and it's going out. They kind of split into their respective rivalries. But then as soon as they went back in the ring, it was Aja versus Akira Hokuto, with probably my most hilarious spot of the match was the casual transitional package pile driver from Aja Kong on Hokuto. Just no big deal.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious. Just casual package pile driver. No, don't worry about it.
That's funny. Oh, yeah, Aja Kong just busts out a pile driver, a package pile driver. The leaping one is really frightening occasionally.
There's also the Bull Nakano to the outside from the top rope that was nuts and got the crowd going, oh, when she did it.
Yeah, Bull Nakano occasionally just busts out, walking the mid rope to the top, and it's just like this big bitch going flying here, and it always gets a big pop.
It's nuts.
Then, right after Bull Nakano does that, Psycho Hokuto over here does a front drop kick from the top turnbuckle to the wooden floor back first. Just like, what? This is why you're hurting so bad, is doing shit like that.
That was my first reaction too. It was like, this is why you're always hurt, Hokuto. Why are you always doing
Holy
this?
Shit. That is a spot that I know, like, it doesn't, like, huh? Do I even say it looks cool? I don't know. It's a fucking wooden floor that you're falling like 12 feet onto your back. Why?
Okay. And you heard the smack too when she landed.
Yeah. Like, there's no way on earth that you're gonna have a fun time walking like a week later. Okay, I'm just back bowling for the first time in like 16 months competitively, and my fucking leg muscles are like seizing because there's just so much force and I haven't used them in a while. Like, imagine, like, I can't imagine myself doing a move like that. Uh-oh, we have an invader.
Oh, somebody came into the podcast.
Hold on. Oh, man. Okay, whoops. That was my fault. That was great.
We're recording private.
We're recording the Discord, and that's great. Keeping that in.
So,
if you want to join the Discord and possibly pop in on the podcast episode, hit me up on Twitter at BowlingJD.
If you guys want to guest star for 2 seconds before we kick you out,
that's great.
So Kong has Hokuto for the top, does a splash backdrop to Pinner. It looks like you put it here. It looks like a botched Canadian Destroyer. I didn't even put that together until I read that. It did look like Canadian Destroyer, didn't it?
Yeah, so the final move sequence is absolutely hysterical, because Bull Nakano basically takes herself out, missing her top flipping leg drop, and they just kind of push her to the outside. And then Kong and Hokuto fight on the top turnbuckle on the other end, diagonal, and Kong's clearly in control. And it functions as a splash backdrop, where she does the backdrop motion and then just lands back first. However, Hokuto like has her legs wrapped around her, and it absolutely looks like it's going to be a top rope Canadian Destroyer, but there's just no energy to flip, and it just goes splat. It's really funny to watch. I laughed, and yeah, Hokuto eats the pin, and that takes us into the finals, and the finals are Yamada and Inoue against Jungle Jack. A fitting final, I would say.
I would say, too, and the first thing I want to notice is the absolute crowd fervor for both of these two. Kyoko Inoue is over, but she's not over with the women. If you listen to the crowd, they're chanting for Yamada.
Yamada's got that look.
Yeah, that's one of the first things I noticed. Once I heard the female screaming out for Yamada, I was like, oh, that's right, she's got the crush gals look. But unlike Hokuto, she's not being presented like she's the next Chigusa or Linus Asuka. I think is what helps her become popular.
You mean Hota, not Hokuto.
I mean Hota. No. Hokuto is already popular with the women and doesn't have to be that way. But Hota was trying, they tried to make her the next Chigusa. And yeah, that failed horribly.
Well, as for looks, but I'm waiting for Hokuto to grow her hair out more. That's what I'm waiting for.
God, we can't be too far off from it, because
this is the end of 91.
She would have it in 94 when they did the dome. So it has to be within the next year or two. It has to be. When she changes her entire look too. New gear, new entrances, the mask, the sword.
The makeup's the big thing I'm waiting for as well.
Yeah,
the black lipstick and whatnot.
I wonder if it just all of a sudden happens one day.
Yeah. There's something to pay attention to.
That's kind of how it happened with Bull, right? Just all of a sudden, she's just this version of Bull.
No, it was a gradual change over time. She slowly got the makeup, then it was the hair was changing colors, and then it was just hairspray one day. But the makeup and colored hair were always a gradual thing with her.
Right. I'm more speaking of the entire package as a whole, because she was coming out in her normal gear. She didn't have the t-shirts constantly. She did sometimes, but it wasn't like she is currently, where she has the face paint and the way that it is and the elaborate gear, entrance gear and everything.
Well, the bigger she got, the more frequent we'd start seeing the t-shirt come into play.
Well, yeah, but I think that's become such a hallmark for her look. That's kind of hard to disassociate her without the t-shirts these days.
I don't know. What's funny is if you look at pictures of Bull Nakano today, compared to various other women's legends, where the other women's legends are like twice the size they used to be, and Nakano is like a fourth of the size. She's super skinny.
Oh yeah, and she looks so different. Like, it's not even the same person. Like, her face is different, her hair, everything about her is so different.
Well, of course she's going to look different in the face and hair, because they're not, like, it's not spiked up blue hair with a can of hairspray.
Well, I mean, if you've seen Bull without the face paint back at this point, she does look very different now. But then again, she was, like, what, not even 20 at this point? So I guess that would make sense.
No, she's in her 20s, mid-20s. Okay, she's about to forcibly retire that they changed the rule.
Oh, right. Jesus Christ. It's so weird because she had been wrestling for so long, because she started when she was like fucking 16.
I think she started at 15.
She started at 15, close to her 16th birthday. They started her earlier. There's like a whole thing that she's brought up, that she was started earlier, and it got her ire from her kohais and senpais. So this match immediately starts with him just fighting in the crowd, right? They just fucking start fighting in the crowd. I loved that. They just immediately go to the crowd.
Yeah, and they do the little brawl, and then they get back in the ring. Jungle Jack isolates Yamada, and then Kyoko gets that tag, and the crowd is way into her. I heard kind of a more general overall sense, but if you were able to pick apart women from men, good on you. I didn't quite hear that differential, but I believe you.
It could have been the headphones I was using, but I kept hearing. So when there was chance for let's go Kyoko, I think was the chant they did. It's all men. You hear no women in that chant.
Well, I mean the there's more men in the crowd in general these days for AJW. They've had the big turnover since the retirement of the Crush Gals.
Look at the front row, though. There was like four women in the front row, and they were all reacting to Yamada. Whenever Yamada got beat up, they had shocked faces. They were hiding their faces, kind of gave me a little bit of vibes of the old Crush Gals time. But they, you would think Kyoko Inoue would have been popular with women. She was to an extent. I mean, Starlight Kid's mom was a big Kyoko Inoue fan, so and she was popular with women. But I feel like at least at this point, Yamada's got more of the female following than, which is probably why she's getting a bit of a push here. They want to try to capitalize on that. They're still trying to capitalize on that a little bit. I don't know if you noticed this, though. Excuse me. But when they brought her to the crowd, there was a guy with full decked out Kyoko Inoue face paint, a shirt with her fucking face on it, and a backwards ball cap as he were brawling in the crowd. It was hilarious.
Our first stan.
That was my first thought. And then if you look right behind them with their fight, there's one gaijin, just a foreign fan there. He's like hyped as fuck for everything. It's hilarious.
Are we sure it's not Dave Meltzer?
His hair is too good to be Dave's.
Okay, all right.
He also doesn't have a big nose like Dave. I'm sorry, Dave, if you're listening to this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's There's some people that listen to this podcast. I don't think he's one of them, though.
I mean, listen, we can always kayfabe it up and hope he does.
All right. Fair enough. I'll play along. Yeah, Kyoko Inoue, very over. Very successful 1991 push for Kyoko Inoue. It's not on purpose. Like, look, they slotted her into the main event to get into 1991, teaming with Bull Nakano and being involved with the Jungle Jack storyline. Being in that big, the hottest story in the company with the hair versus hair match, they went into the Grand Prix. She won it. The whole thing was about her getting over. It did. It totally worked. And we're seeing the dividends paying off. And, well, get further into the match. What's interesting about this was how Yamada was getting super over. I wonder if this, because I didn't notice how over she was prior to the tag league.
I'm sure it
had something to do with the ongoing rivalry that we've now seen played out with Manami Toyota further along in 91, and then this tag league absolutely contributed. And being with Inoue and being kind of the underdog strong team coming back from Mexico, they're both over because of it. And Yamada's definitely getting a big rub being with Kyoko Inoue with her successful push.
Yeah, it's almost like whenever she got tagged in, the crowd erupted. So she was definitely over. Yamada was over to an extent, like I keep saying, she was over as well. But I feel like out of everyone in this match, I think Kyoko Inoue was the most over. Like, I think they definitely were like, oh, that's our superstar. We've got one right there. Which is why, to our conversation earlier, I don't think, like you said, I don't think it's a matter of that they didn't have people. They couldn't make stars. They just didn't have anybody come out of the dojo that was worthy of being made into a star because they all sucked.
Well, I think the crowd also against Jungle Jack here was also a big factor, because if you kind of look back at 91 since January, since that loss, Jungle Jack's kind of rolled through everybody. Like, they've had these tag titles a long time.
They definitely have. But it's weird with Aja, because it keeps feeling like they want to position her as a face, weirdly. Times because they're trying to make Bull a heel, which is why they did the whole thing with Monster Ripper. They're trying to make her a heel again. It's just kind of weird what they're trying to do. I do know Aja does become a face when she wins the belt, because she goes into like all of the big matches, and like she goes into the Tokyo Dome as a giant baby face.
Well, here's the thing. Bull Nakano has held, we've mentioned this before, Bull Nakano held that title so long that she became a baby face. She got it originally as a heel. Then she became a face. Then she's held it so long, she became the enemy again. And then they did the Monster Ripper angle, where she kind of did the babyface comeback against the big Gaijin heel. And the problem that I'm noticing is, unfortunately, with Jungle Jack, Bison Kimura is a huge heel. There's no doubt about it. And
she's a natural heel. A natural heel.
Yeah, I
love
Bison
Kimura. There's no way you can make her a face.
Aja Kong, by association and the fact that they've rolled through so many tag opponents, including going through the tag league pretty strong and holding the titles together themselves, it's also having the effect on Aja Kong, who was becoming a de facto babyface. So now they got to kind of pivot the other way around again, because now Bull Nakano's being seen as a face again and Aja Kong by association is a heel. It's a very interesting development that they really got to structure properly. And I mean, we know how it turns out, but how do they get back to that point is going to be interesting. I think them losing here, spoiler, was very much important to that process.
Yeah, Yamada wins with a top rope roundhouse kick.
Yeah, so
it looks sick. It looks sick because she nailed it flush. If you look at it, it was great.
Yeah, and just kind of, if you're gauging crowd reaction, there's just a moment kind of just midway where Aja Kong just casually comes in and breaks up a Yamada pin, and she gets heavy boos because of it. That's kind of what we're talking about.
And so we know the destination of what they end up when she wins the belt, but it's kind of weird to see how they get there, because, like you said, they're trying to make Bull a heel by making her more vicious again, but now Aja's getting booed. But Bull isn't getting cheered either.
No.
it's kind of weird because
they're really trying to keep her heel and get Kong face, but it's just not working.
Yeah, I think it's kind of telling that the interactions that the crowd has with both people is either booing both of them or whenever they collide, just going gasping and awing because it's such a big matchup. Very interesting.
So for the match itself, I did vastly enjoy this. It just didn't grab me nearly as high as the semifinal. Did you feel the same way?
No, I enjoyed both of them about the same. I thought they were both excellent. I was very much into this one, but you guys gotta remember, I'm a big fan of Yamada, so she spent a lot of time in the ring, so she got her kicks over. Yeah, well, listen, Yamada's great, and I've made this note before. I'm a giant fan of good striker wrestlers, hence my favorite being Momo Watanabe. So when she's kicking the shit out of Bison, I am losing my shit, because it's awesome.
The finishing stretch was incredible. I really liked it. It was very stressful. Yamada starts going to town on Aja Kong with these kicks to the face, and it almost looked like a knockout finish. Daichi, the referee, he is phenomenal at these things. He is one of my favorite refs to watch, and he's been doing this since the fucking late 80s, at least, where he just knows how to react and pull people away and really check on the wrestler. I thought they were going to do a knockout finish on Aja Kong, and I was like, I don't know if I love that or not because of the destination they got to get with Kong. And they do a couple.
She just got knocked out, too. Just got knocked out.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, they're going to do. Yeah, they just did the cage knockout. So what are they doing with Kong? But they do a few big moves, and they finish off, indeed, Aja Kong with the Yamada top rope roundhouse kick that they did. Very surprising to me that Aja took the fall here in the final. But to be fair, Bison Kimura is also the white belt champion, which makes me think, was it the right decision to have Jungle Jack in the final? I'm kind of leaning towards now Bison should have taken the fall in the semis to Hokuto, and then and then you can have Hokuto take the fall in the final if need be.
Well, as to our conversation we just got done having, how do you make them start cheering for Aja again? Well, because Jungle Jack's been so dominant, Aja
she's
take the
lose.
Pin.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta have her get knocked down a few pegs so the fans can rally behind her so she's not so dominant.
Yep, there's your answer.
That's what made sense to me. When she got pinned, at first I was shocked, but I was like, okay, but that makes sense, though. You want them to start cheering for Aja and they're giving the adverse reaction. You don't want them to cheer for Bull. So it makes sense, especially because they want to make Aja Kong their next big babyface. Because Bull won the belt, as to your point, as a heel. And she was a heel for at least the first portion of that run. They don't want a heel on top of Gin. It kind of makes sense to do that.
Yeah, puzzle pieces fit based on what they were going for. So, like you said, knocking down a peg. I did ask myself the question, like, what if it was the other way around? Would that have accomplished the Aja turn better? And I think you're right. I think this was the right way to go. Crowd stomped and reacted hard for the end here, so big thumbs up. You know it's a good match when the crowd reacts the way they did. So in the sense of crowd reaction, this match was definitely better than the semifinal. I think
hotter, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Well, I still think the other match was hotter from start to finish, while I think a good chunk of, like, once they got in the ring after brawling in that short stint in the at the beginning, I think it really fell off until the last kind of big sequence, but it did grab the crowd in the end. So take that for what it's worth. Good stuff.
And also, I think Yamada's kicks, the crowd is reacting very favorably to those. She was hitting a lot of those flush, so I think maybe she did knock Aja for us for a bit of a loop there, because that one kick hit really hard to the side of the head.
Got her good. Yeah, I'm sure,
like,
you're
Yamada
right.
Was not holding back. She was shoot kicking the shit out of Aja Kong.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, you clearly see the roster of AJW improving at a rapid rate heading into 92 here, and they're just ready to take off. The gear, the appearance, the physicality, the conditioning of all these women are reaching that next level, as opposed to the very rough couple years that we saw with 89 and 90. And over on AJW Destiny, I'm kind of rewatching a lot of that 88. Where Bull Nakano finally got her push, that once Dump Matsumoto and company went retired.
Yeah, once Dump left for the past years, only to come back decades later.
Yeah, it's a very different outlook on what's happening It's very cool to see. What's
an interesting question that I just thought of, because AGW is designated as it's three big decades, right? The three big sort of boom periods for the company, right? You have the 70s,
mm-hmm.
right? With Black Pair and Beauty Pair and Mach and all that stuff. You have the 80s with the Crush Cows and Gokako Dome, right? And then you have the 90s with Bull and Aja and Manami and Inoue and all that stuff. I wonder, it'd be a good talking point to discuss which decade or which boom period you think is better overall. Like, not just ignoring the financial aspect, because the 90s would be not the best financial aspect of them. The 80s would clearly but they're better financially, right? I think just from a in-ring standpoint and from a presentation standpoint, I think that'd be very interesting.
Well, I'm working on a big project here for the Patreon, and those are kind of the questions I'm asking just from in-ring standpoints and hotness of matches and how much that matters to kind of what matches you should go out and watch for. There's a big hint for what I'm working on. Yeah, it's a good topic.
Yeah, because it's modern stardom with their big arena shows reminds me of 90s AJW, not 80s. The big flair and lights and presentation, because 80s didn't have a whole lot of that. It had that, but not to the extent of the 90s.
The pageantry is not there.
Yeah, so I feel like the 90s are like where I think it's the best.
Funny you mention that, because watching the old NWAs, they also have like very little pageantry to it all.
Yeah, I'm a mark for the big pageantry and lights. So when you have the lights and the smoke and the big entrances, I'm a mark for that easily. Like, you give your ship down barebone entrances, I lose interest in for that.
I mean,
if that's all you do, even for your big shows don't feel big anymore.
Well, it's something to be said about star power, and it's just kind of something that evolved in the wrestling business, whether it was WWF or WCW or AJW. Like, it was just something that, I guess, promoters figured out, and I think boxing had a lot to do with it. Because
boxing, especially the Tyson era of boxing, had a lot of that lights and the music and like the fanfare.
So then they saw that and they just kind of took inspiration from it. But anyways, let's finish AJW here. I'm going to play us out to the next one.